I drink your milkshake.
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
This is Remember That Film, the show which covers a look back on memories, nostalgia, and behind-the-scenes facts that you may not have known about your favourite films.
John Carpenter's 1978, a slasher film Halloween inspired nearly two decades worth of imitations and established many of the tropes that would become synonymous with the horror subgenre. It stars English character actor Donald Pleasance. You may know him from You Only Live Twice, and The Great Escape was his biggest film before then. He's a psychologist, Dr. Samuel Loomis, a man who's been studying the infamous Michael Myers since his clinical incarceration from childhood, and the original Scream Queen, Jamie Lee Curtis. Yep, she's the one that sort of started these Scream Queens. People know her more later on, you know, stuff like True Lies, Freaky Friday, and My Girl as well. She was the mother there, well, not quite the mother, but the father's partner. She was one of the last girls, you know, after Black Christmas, which we described, Laurie. A role that would influence not only the slasher subgenre, but also other subgenres of horror in years that follows. On a fateful Halloween night, 6-year-old Michael Myers murders his 17-year-old sister in her bedroom after she has sex. The child is incarcerated in a mental institution for 15 years, lying there for 15 years. Michael does not speak, barely even moves. But when he escapes during a court transfer, he returns to his childhood home and the hunt on Halloween night. As the film, Halloween draws much of its tone and mood from 1960s Psycho. Its slow but careful build, its masterful use of sound and music to define emotion, its focus on the mundane to create a contrast between scenes were all used to great effect in the film. It takes place of what worked from Alfred Hitchcock's psychological slasher masterpiece and shaped it into something more appropriate for its time without needing to conform to the formula that its predecessor established. Unlike the slasher flicks that followed, Halloween, the film, does not define itself by its genre. Films like Friday the 13th seem as if they were more than anything written to satisfy slasher tropes. That's correct. But Halloween, despite being a genre film itself, is pure. Its use and timing of musical scoring is one of Halloween's strongest elements, of not its strongest hands down. Director John Carpenter is also a composer who's inspired by the likes of Hans Zimmer, and his proficiency in music shows in Halloween's now iconic theme, and as well as his use of sound and music to build and release tension and build atmosphere and drama. My biggest problem with horror films in 2020, or the last decade, or last 20 years, is stupid, unneeded jump scares just to throw you off. It's just not horror to me. You're sitting there waiting for the fake jump scare, waiting for something to happen, then we go, oh, and then all of a sudden, boom, you know. And it's, the whole point of it is just to startle you, and it's not horror to me. You watch Halloween, even Friday the 13th, the acting is absolutely appalling in that movie. I watched it only a week ago. But there is no jump scares in it except for the one that matters towards the end where you least expect it, and that isn't a false jump scare, that is a proper jump scare. But you don't need people whacking down doors and all the music just boom, coming up. Horror is not really well done today. It's got to be in your head of how it's supposed to be done. The film, this film is simply yet lingering film. Theme pairs perfectly with Michael Myers' slow yet unsettling stride. Carpenter also uses music to create a subtle difference between the real and fake jump scares in the film, as I was talking about. In the fake ones, the music builds slowly to a crescendo and then never comes, completely cut off by the on-screen climax. The music simply stops. It's a technique that builds tension without releasing it. In real ones, the music also builds slowly, but here It accumulates into a climactic note that embodies that on-screen terror and continues on. Yeah, so we're going to have some John Carpenter score coming up now from Halloween. There was a second movie. John Carpenter himself admitted he got drunk one night because they asked him, they needed a Halloween 2 sequel just because of the way it ends. It wasn't supposed to be a sequel. Mike Myers thrown up like it ended like a sequel, like he just disappears at the end after he's shot. John Carpenter got drunk one night, wrote a script, and then you had Halloween 2, which has quite a few issues in it. The first one being he decided to say Mike Myers was his Laurie's sister. That was not predetermined when they made the first film, so that had to be, that was in the second one. So I actually haven't seen the 2018 Halloween, but apparently that's all gone down the window because everything doesn't exist. And you have Laurie in the hospital the entire film, and she's wearing Jamie Lee Curtis is wearing a really bad wig at the time. So that whole movie really is just an excuse to show more gore and kills. But it's still better than any other sequel that came out of Halloween, because the third one, they decided, let's go away from Mike Myers into something else, which was an absolute disaster. And then they tried about a dozen other Halloween films, 4, 5, 6, return Mike Myers returns, and then they came up with H2O in the 90s. Jamie Lee Curtis made a comeback. And then she came back for another film where she was killed off in 5 minutes. And then in 2018, they decided, okay, none of that exists. Let's just continue the story 30 years later after the first film. And a lot of movies are doing that now with franchises that have completely collapsed, pretending that the middle part never happened. Let's see. But John Carpenter, that suspenseful music we're talking about, let's play it now. That Film October. It's all about the slasher films. And then we reached the 80s, where we had a whole string of sequels of Halloween and copycats, Slumber Party Massacre and stuff like that. But Friday the 13th, which I watched last weekend, had been quite a few years since I've seen Friday the 13th. The original, the first one. I don't really care about any of the sequels after that, all the remakes. But the interesting thing about the first one is, if you've gone into watching Friday the 13th for the first time and you've heard all about this character Jason, you don't see the twist coming on the first one where, spoiler alert, you find out it's Jason's mother the whole time. You're thinking it is Jason because going into that movie the first time, you hear about Jason Voorhees, you know, an infamous horror character, you know, along with Mike Myers and Halloween. And if you're watching that the first time, you don't sort of see the thing at the end. You do not see Jason until the big jump scare out of the water with the beautiful classical music that's going in the background. First time I watched it, I jumped out of my skin. I must have been probably 12 or 13 years old. Dad knew what was coming. He was sitting behind me, and I think he laughed his head off because he was waiting for my reaction to see what would happen. Now I can pinpoint where that jump is coming from every time I watch that film. Of what I noticed with that first Friday the 13th to come out in 1980, 2 years after Halloween, the acting was appalling. I mean, the Halloween acting wasn't so good either. Jamie Lee Curtis became a better actor over the years when, but stuff like Totally and, you know, PJ Souls and all those people that were the other actors in that movie. It wasn't about the acting, though. Horror movies, it's all about the thrill and the fun and the scares. And with Friday the 13th, you just had a lot of dumb teenagers. A lot of teenagers that can't act. A very young Kevin Bacon, one of his first movies. It's funny how a lot of these people started. We'll have another one. Those Hollywood actors that are really big right now in the second hour, we'll talk about who was in an original slasher movie when we get there. Kevin Bacon, they had no budget, so they actually had to show this fake gore, and a lot of it happened by accident. One of the kills where the arrow goes through the throat of Kevin Bacon's, the blood squirted up by accident, was someone blowing into a straw, and that's how they did special effects back in 1980. Today is just too much CGI and fake stuff, but happy accidents happened back then. But also with Friday the 13th, Betsy Palmer, the best part of that movie is the last 20 minutes when you get Betsy Palmer, who was a stage show actor who thought, what crap am I doing here in this Friday the 13th horror film? And they were trying to find out the score to the music. And the director of Friday the 13th came up with Betsy Palmer, who was hearing voices in her head of Jason saying, kill mummy, kill her. And they came up with the Friday the 13th theme, slashes. You're on 2MCE. If you were a film buff in the mid-90s, there was no prospect more exciting than the idea of Quentin Tarantino and Robert Rodriguez teaming up together for a movie about bank robbers on the run from the law. But long before they were involved with Dusk Till Dawn, it was the brainchild of the makeup effects legend Robert Kirkman. And we are not talking about some cursory, bare-bones premise with only a tenuous connection to the finished product. Kirkman had written a 25-page treatment outlining every major story beat and character. And since he originally hoped to direct the film himself, he even shot a short teaser trailer starring A Day of the Dead's Joseph Potato to help generate interest in the product and trailer that actually contains numerous shots that were directly copied into the film. After providing some prosthetic effects from Reservoir Dogs, Kirkman asked if Quentin Tarantino would return the favour by taking his treatment and fleshing it out with a full-length script. Tarantino agreed, and although Kirkman remained heavily involved, directional duties eventually fell to Robert Rodriguez, and From Dusk Till Dawn has completed its revolution as the film we know it as today. In addition to the talent behind the camera, the film was also noteworthy for giving George Clooney his first major starring role. And for audience at this point who knew him best for the heroic and charming Dr. Ross on ER, this was a pretty shocking departure. Quentin Tarantino happened to direct one episode of ER and was impressed by George Clooney that he decided to get him involved with From Dusk Till Dawn. This is the big reason why George Clooney was able to kick-start his movie career, and at the time was given no to everything, because he was known as just a typecast doctor from a TV show. Even now, if you're not familiar with the film, an extreme turn it takes halfway through the film, so if you are too young to remember the summer of 1996, it might surprise you to know that the twist was spoiled early and often in all of the advertising. In fact, it was often referred to as the Quentin Tarantino vampire film, which meant for many of us, most surprising things about From Dusk Till Dawn was not that there was the vampires in it, it was that it took so damn long for the vampires to actually show up. Nevertheless, despite it being explicitly and unceremoniously dumped into the wasteland, into the cinema known as January, the film was successful enough to spawn two straight-to-video sequels, and most recently, a TV that retells and expands upon the original events of the film. A story of me watching it, it would have been, 1996, but I did see it at the movies, would have came out on VHS, probably about winter time for here in Australia. Dad got me the VHS of From Dusk Till Dawn. I had no idea what it was about, just that Quentin Tarantino was in it, and we'd already watched stuff like Pulp Fiction and Reservoir Dogs. So I went watching this film, and I thought, okay, this is just going to be another crime drama. He didn't tell me anything about what it was about. Here I was watching another Pulp Fiction and Reservoir Dogs bank robbers crime story. And in the middle of the film, we get to the bar scene where everything starts to take a twist. And Dad said, oh, this must be where things start to actually change. And I started frowning, and all of a sudden, we turn into a vampire film. And I didn't know what the hell was happening. He got me really good, and I was fortunate enough not to have known anything about it or what it was about, so my reactions were real to the movie, so it was really, really good. And I wish other people were able to have that as they grew up watching it. But as I mentioned before, some of it got spoiled. If you back then, there was no YouTube and all that sort of stuff in the 90s, so it probably was harder to spoil it from you. So hopefully those got to watch the experience that I had of not knowing. But it came with an exciting soundtrack as well from Dusk Till Dawn. It's a dark night.
Everybody be cool. You be cool.
Mm-hmm. hot air hangs like a dead man from a white oak tree. People sitting on porches thinking how things used to be. Dark night. It's a dark night. It's a dog.
me free. And now we're alone. I asked her to stay, but she had to go. She's made up her mind that I'm just a fool. My love is blind, and it's all because of you. Foolish heart, you who made me weep. Foolish heart, I'm yours to keep. You're the one that's still with me. Foolish heart, don't set me free. Foolish heart, don't set me free.
2MCE, remember that film with Adam this afternoon, and we're in our middle of our horror movie month of October, and this afternoon we just heard some Foolish Heart there by the Mavericks from the Dusk Till Dawn soundtrack. We're going to hear heaps more tracks from that soundtrack too, because there are some strange songs on that soundtrack, cross between country and a bit of rockabilly there. There is one strange song we'll get to called Texas, which has the worst lyrics you'll ever hear. Back if Good, Bad, and Ugly was still around with the Cult Fiction days of Tad, it would have been a great one to put on there as well. While we're still talking about vampires, there was a horror movie month. There was a TV show called Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I guess it wasn't really a horror horror TV show, where, you know, it had a mix between the drama and comedy, and it was Michelle Jeller's real breakthrough that she came through, and she was a big star. But people don't know there was actually a movie as well called Buffy the Vampire Slayer before the TV series came out. Luke Perry, actually, the late great Luke Perry, actually starred in that film. But here's the over a chew and hour from the Buffy the Vampire Slayer. You may recognize this. This is, well, some 90s. Heat your heart out.
Single night, the same arrangement, I go out and fight the fight. Still I always feel the strangest estrangement. Nothing here is real, nothing here is right. I've been making shows of trading blows, just hoping no one knows. But I've been going through the motions, walking through the part. Nothing seems to penetrate my heart. I was always brave and kind of righteous, now I find I'm wavering. Crawl out of your grave, you find this fight just doesn't mean a thing.
She ain't got that swing.
Thanks for noticing.
She is pretty well with fiends from hell, but lately we can tell that she's just going through the motions, faking it somehow. She
She's not even half the girl she... Oh.
Will I stay this way forever? Sleepwalk through my life's endeavor.
How can I repay?
Whatever, I don't want to be. Going through the motions, losing all my drive. I can't even see if this is really me. And I just want... Life's a show and we all play our part. And when the music starts, we open up our hearts. It's alright if some things come out wrong. We'll sing a happy song and you can sing along. Where there's life, there's hope. Wishes can come true. With so long, you work so hard all day to be like other girls, to fit in this glittering world. Don't give me songs. Don't give me songs. Give me something to sing to rehearse, and every single verse can make it that much worse. Still my friends don't know why I ignore the million things or more I should be dancing for. All the joy, life sends family and friends. So that's my refrain. I live in hell, 'cause I've been expelled from heaven. I think I was in heaven. So give me something to sing about. Please give me something.
Life's not a song. Life isn't bliss. Life is just this. It's living. You'll get along. The pain that you feel, you only can heal by living. Have to go on living.
one of us is living.
Myself.